Under Scrutiny, Maine's System for Providing Legal Counsel to the Poor. Maine is the only state in the nation without a public defender system. Here, the state pays private attorneys to represent defendants who cannot afford a lawyer on their own. Many people believe the current system doesn't work, that lawyers are not paid enough, not trained or supervised well enough, have to handle too many defendants at a time, and aren't given the resources to best represent them. Plus, now the system is under investigation for alleged overbilling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, how the state's indigent defense system works and why some are calling for changes to it. A nonpartisan national organization has come up with a list of recommendations, and now the legislature is considering those changes. What's on the table? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Sixth Amendment to the Constitution guarantees anyone charged with a crime representation by qualified counsel. In other words, poor people are entitled to a lawyer. Each state has its own system for indigent defense, and Maine's has been under intense scrutiny. Many believe the system is broken. Joining me in the studio, Jamesa Drake. She is president of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and has argued before the U.S. Supreme Court. Allison B.A. is executive director of the ACLU of Maine, and Josh Tardy is chair of the Maine Commission of Indigent Legal Services. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you think ought to happen? Do you have experience in the court system? Share your thoughts or questions by emailing, and please a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Or go to today's Facebook post and put a question in the comment section. Thank you all for being here in a snowstorm. I really appreciate it every day, but especially days like this. Josh, I'm going to start with you and just ask, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that not only does Maine not have a public defender system, we're the only state in the nation without a public defender system. And I'm guessing you were not around at the inception of this idea, but why is it that Maine is in the place we are today? What is the system like and why do we have this system?
So Maine has operated with a system of court-appointed attorneys who are private practice practitioners who have agreed to take court appointments for those who qualify and are characterized as indigent under certain guidelines, and they work for those constitutionally required types of cases. So criminal cases, child protective cases, certain emancipation cases, and in areas where the Constitution is required that if you can't afford an attorney, that the government will provide you one, and you'll have that representation. In 2009, the legislature took over basically created the commission that I now chair, the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services. It was designed to be an independent commission versus having the courts be in charge of appointments, if you will, and the processing of payment vouchers. And so the legislature created this Commission on Indigent Legal Services. And our function is to ensure that justice is provided for those people in Maine who are indigent and need legal representation. And we're responsible for making sure that attorneys are adequately trained, adequately supervised, and that there's an effective representation done for anybody who is requires a court-appointed attorney.
Okay, so your commission oversees how many cases a year?
So we have approximately 600 attorneys who are rostered in various capacities. Probably half of those attorneys focus their practice on criminal defense, maybe a little more than half. But there is another roster that's in the child protective arena, and that's, for example, a case where the Department of Human Services has filed a petition to take custody of a child. Those parents who are the subject of that child protection action have a constitutional right to court-appointed attorneys. a juvenile charged with a crime is entitled to a court-appointed attorney. A child that's looking, or a teenager is looking to be emancipated and have independent rights established, has the right to be a court-appointed attorney. So it's approximately 300 to 600 at any given time.
And Jamesa, from the point of view of a criminal defense attorney, does one sign up to be a part of this pool? Is one assigned whether they want to be a defense attorney in one of these cases? How does it work from your end?
So attorneys who are committed to doing this type of work agree to go through the training and meet the minimum standards that are required to be what's called rostered. So their name is put on a list.
And they put themselves forward voluntarily.
They do. The lists are broken down geographically. So, for example, you can agree to be an attorney willing to take court-appointed work in Androscoggin County. And then within the geographic designations, there are specialized case types. So if you have a particular interest in doing appeals or post-conviction work, you can get on a specialized panel to take that type of case. But yes, these are all attorneys who are, to some degree or another, but to a large degree, committed to the notions articulated by the United States Supreme Court in their landmark case, Gideon, which is that everyone, regardless of means, is entitled to representation in court, particularly if their liberty interests are at stake, if there's a possibility that they could be imprisoned or subject to any of the many collateral consequences that follow today from a criminal conviction.
How many cases do most of these lawyers handle at once?
It's hard to say, and I'm not sure that there's data that's actually collected on this, which may be something that the commission will work towards gathering that information. There's attorneys who are rostered who take a handful of court-appointed cases, and it augments what is otherwise a robust retained practice or a practice that's not criminal, but it focuses on civil litigation. There's attorneys who do this sort of work exclusively. One of the unique and nice features of Maine's system is that the attorney has control over how many cases he or she has on her caseload. When we hear nightmare stories about public defender offices in other jurisdictions, primarily what we hear about are caseloads that have just run amok, attorneys that have 400 or 500 cases per person. That's not a problem that we have here in Maine, because an attorney can easily say, I've taken enough cases, go right ahead and assign that case to someone else, and the court will do that.
All right. I want to turn to you, Allison. You are among many people who believe the system's broken here. What's wrong with Maine's system?
Well, I think that Josh and Jamesa did a great job laying out what our goals for the system are and the aspirations that we have about why people in Maine, it is so important that they have competent, adequate counsel. And I think what we've seen is that the system has been underfunded for decades, and the system is no longer functioning, or maybe never has functioned, to actually take care of those constitutional principles. These are deeply embedded in who we are as a nation, and they are critically important. The court has made clear that although we may not have to provide absolutely equal on either side, that the prosecution and the defense don't have to have equal resources, it has to be a fair fight. And what we're seeing in Maine right now is that the defense system is not properly funded, and it really isn't a fair fight. And this has big implications. I mean, these aren't just legal principles we're talking about. We're talking about people's lives. And so when these constitutional principles are not upheld, families are separated, communities are hurt, and we further feed a overinflated criminal justice system. So the impact of a dysfunctional system hurts everybody.
Give us an example of a case in which the system has failed the defendant because of the way it's set up.
Well, I think it's important to frame out a little bit to say that this is just one part of a criminal legal system that is failing everywhere. So there are problems throughout the system where we are not seeing people get equal treatment. You know, we all grow up with this sort of being raised on television shows that sort of say we're all equal in front of the law. Well, if you walk into a courtroom today, you won't see that happening. And there's very often a difference between how you're treated if you have resources to hire an attorney or if you have to rely on a court-appointed system. So, I mean, I think we can see that every day, and I would encourage your listeners to, you know, courts are open, and I'd encourage you to, and all people, to go in and take a look and see what it's like, and you'll see it's not as we had hoped. It is not a fair fight.
I understand one of the biggest criticisms of your organization and others is this lawyer of the day way that Maine works. Explain that to me and what's wrong with it.
So lawyer of the day was, I think, an effort to actually try to make the system better. The situation that was happening was that the caseloads were too high. The docket, the court was trying to move its caseload, and people didn't have access to, they couldn't get attorneys represented or appointed to them fast enough. And so Lawyer of the Day was created in a way to try to make sure that people had some representation when they had a first appearance in court. And so like many things that happen in state government, I think what was well-intentioned has had some negative outcomes. And so in the recent report that was issued documenting the problems in the system, they specifically suggested that the Lawyer of the Day program was problematic, unconstitutional, because defendants were not actually being fully represented. They were not actually knowing their rights in a way that would be meaningful for them. The lawyers didn't have enough time. There was nothing a Lawyer of the Day could do. They would see a client so quickly, and they couldn't do the kind of robust advocacy that lawyers in Maine want to do.
Josh, do you believe that's true? As chair of the commission, do you believe people are not getting equal treatment?
I think it does occur on a case-by-case basis. I'm not sure that we have the ability right now to do the proper evaluation of these conclusions that the Sixth Amendment Center just landed on.
I'm going to back up a little bit because we haven't talked about that. The Legislative Council asked the something called the Sixth Amendment Center, which is a national nonpartisan organization, to look at Maine's system, and they've come up with a list of recommendations, which the legislature is going to consider this session. Okay, so now go back, Josh.
So the Sixth Amendment concludes what many people suspect, that some defendants in Maine courts are not getting equal representation and adequate representation. Effective assistance of counsel is really the legal term. And I'm not sure that the commission has the processes in place to properly evaluate that conclusion. I think we all fear that might be the case. I don't think you can just go to court and observe and determine whether someone's getting effective representation. I think many times it's outcome-based, it's process-based. We don't necessarily know when you go and observe court the work product that goes into a particular representation on a case-by-case, in a day-by-day basis. We don't know how really each particular attorney performs on each particular case. And so, I mean, I share the concerns of the Sixth Amendment Center and Allison's group. I'm not there yet.
You know, so I'm going to talk about some of the actually, I'm going to have you all tell us about some of the recommendations from the Sixth Amendment Center. Who wants to volunteer?
Well, can I just respond to Josh? Yeah. I think he raises a good point. And I think he raises the very issue, is that we don't know. And that in and of itself is problematic. There are many attorneys who are giving exceptional representation. And then there are some who may not be able to, for lack of resources or other issues, not live up to their promises. The biggest problem is we don't know. And if we have a system that can't evaluate that, I think Josh would agree that we're deeply concerned that the state needs to know that. They should understand that system.
So who wants to raise their hand and volunteer to sort of outline what the recommendations of the center have been?
The Sixth Amendment Center put together a variety of different recommendations about the ways in which Josh's commission going forward can think about improving our indigent defense delivery system. In putting their report together, they spent a lot of time in courtrooms observing, like Allison mentions. They spent a lot of time talking to stakeholders in the system. They spoke with a wide variety of criminal defense attorneys, prosecutors, judges, individual defendants who themselves had been through the system to find out what worked and didn't work. As we said at the top of the hour, Maine is unique in that it has this way of providing lawyers to poor people that no other state in the nation utilize it. So that in itself sort of raises some questions about why is Maine doing what it's doing when no one else has chosen to do it this way? So they looked at ways to reform the lawyer of the day system. Because Maine doesn't have a public defender office, it needs to find attorneys who are available for defendants when they have their very first contact in court with a judge. And in a public defender office, you would just assign a duty attorney to go down, meet with these clients, and that person would become their client. But Maine doesn't have that system, so it had to create something else, and out of that was born Lawyer of the Day. The Sixth Amendment Center report has other important recommendations in terms of attorney training, minimum standards to qualify for rosters and specialized case types. They had recommendations for the ways in which prosecutors interact with the system and whether prosecutors were inappropriately communicating with unrepresented defendants during this initial contact with the court. They had recommendations about the rate at which attorneys are paid. Maine attorneys are paid far below market rate to represent poor defendants, and they're also disproportionately paid lower than attorneys in other jurisdictions who do this sort of work. So there's a lot to consider going forward, lots of constructive recommendations for everyone who touches our system, whether they're defense attorneys or prosecutors or judges or court staff, to think about the ways in which we provide poor people with attorneys. And so Josh and the commission has sort of been systematically working through these, the hope of providing some recommendations to the legislature.
What's interesting is, one of the many things that's interesting, is, I should say, is that the Sixth Amendment Center does not recommend Maine take up a public defender system. Why do you think that is?
Anything that's on the list of proposed recommendations costs money. And a public defender office is potentially more costly than the system we have in place now. We don't know that for sure, but it certainly seems that way if we look at comparative budgets in other jurisdictions. Whether there is an appetite to spend more money on indigent defense is really sort of an open question. And so it makes sense to consider a public defender system, a public defender system that's limited to a specific geographic area, or other delivery systems that are in place and working successfully around the country. Many states have what's considered a hybrid system. So there's a core public defender function, public brick and mortar public defender office, and then a contract system. The contract system would function very similar to the system we have right now, whether it makes sense to continue with our current system. My understanding from speaking with the authors of that report and their listening to their presentations to the legislature is that the delivery system is much less important than the funding level of that delivery system. So nobody wants an underfunded public defender's office. That doesn't make any sense, or an underfunded contract system, or an underfunded system in place now, which is what we have. So once you figure out how much money the legislature is really willing to allocate, then you can think about how you want to tailor your delivery program.
And Allison, this goes back to how you started, that this is an underfunded system. How much more does it need? Do we know?
I don't think we know right now what the costs would be. What we do know is that we're going to have to increase some amount of spending. The system is completely broken. And we're going to have to make changes. And I think that I completely agree with Jamesa that I think there's a concern. We don't want to lose too much of our focus. We don't want to sort of get caught up too much in a conversation about what is the perfect system. Because as she mentioned, there are other states that have public defender systems where caseloads are so high, where they're under-resourced just as poorly, and you're not getting any better outcomes. And so what we really want to be thinking about in Maine is how do we make sure that our communities and our low-income Mainers who are accused of a crime have the best qualified, trained, supported, resourced attorneys who can really walk them through this process. And, you know, I think increasingly in our communities, we're talking about the criminal justice system. We're talking about how it has a much sort of larger impact on our communities than we had thought about. As we continue to increase incarceration rates, as we continue, I mean, I always think back about how when Sesame Street started actually having a character that one of the children had a parent who's incarcerated. We've changed as a country. We've changed who we are. And so we want to be thinking in our communities about how we provide people in this situation. And I think, you know, it's not just about people accused of crime. It impacts everyone. It impacts victims. It impacts the communities. And so when one part of a system is so dysfunctional and underfunded, it has a ripple effect on all other areas, and we want to fix that.
All right. Well, we do need to take a quick break. We're talking about Maine's system for defending people who cannot afford their own attorney who are accused of a crime. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The crashes of two 737 MAX airplanes made 2019 one of the worst years in Boeing's history, and the new year isn't starting off much better.
Nevertheless, the emphasis on shareholder returns seems to be continuing, so it's not really clear that they've got their priorities set here.
The future of Boeing under crisis this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's coming up later today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
I grew up in Maine, and I thought I would never get back to Maine. I went off to the Navy and a lot of different places around the country, and we ended up in Washington, D.C., raising a couple of young kids. And one day, my wife and I said to each other, you know, it doesn't make any sense to live here. We should be back in Maine. Maine is a really authentic place. It's a place where people don't put on pretensions. It's a place where you really feel like you're part of a neighborhood and you work together to get things done. It's a place that is just beautiful to relax in, to swim in, to fish in. It's just a marvelous place. I'm Ron from Cumberland, and this is my Maine.
This is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, helping the poor get good legal counsel when charged with a crime. My guests are Joshua Tardy, chair of the Maine Commission of Indigent Legal Services, and an attorney with the law firm Rudman Winchell. He served in the Maine House of Representatives from 2002 to 2010, including two terms as minority leader. Jamesa Drake is president of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and has litigated hundreds of criminal appeals and represented seven people on death row. And Allison B.A. is executive director of the ACLU of Maine, where she oversees the organization's legal, legislative, public education, and development activities. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Victoria Morales. She is serving her first term representing Maine's House District 33, which covers South Portland. She's chair of the Young People's Caucus and is an attorney. She's executive director of the Quality Housing Coalition and co-founder of the Maine Youth Court. Representative Morales, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
I understand you currently have a bill that addresses legal representation for Maine's indigent. Tell us about your bill and how it might fit in with some of the other bills before the legislature this session.
Absolutely. A large part of this bill, the title of the bill is LD 1684, and it's an act to clarify the right to counsel for juveniles. Because one of the issues that you've been talking about and sort of the lens that I look at this through is through juvenile justice and public health. in Maine today, once young people are sentenced to incarceration in Long Creek, they are not afforded counsel. And so what LD 1684 does is that it provides counsel and a 90-day review of that sentence, which is really important to be able to document and review the programming that is going on while the young person is incarcerated, as well as any treatments or any abuses. And whether there's any a least restrictive alternative, because that's the law currently, that there if there is a least restrictive alternative that, other than incarceration, that's where the young person should be. And without counsel to be able to go over that and judicial review of what's going on while a young person is incarcerated, there's simply no oversight of how a young person is being treated. Another big piece of LD 1684 is that it removes the mandatory minimum sentence of 1 year of incarceration for all juvenile offenses. And that really goes along with studies across the nation that really 6 months of incarceration for a juvenile is more harmful than helpful. And then the last two pieces of this bill, it's a really big bill, but it's really exciting, and I'm really happy about it, is that it increases the rate of the age of criminality, so to 12, which means that any action committed by a young person under the age of 12, so 11 and under, would not be a criminal offense dealt with by the Department of Corrections or the criminal justice system. And then the last piece of the bill is that no young people 13 and under can be incarcerated. And so this bill takes a really big step towards best practices around the country to not simply use the criminal justice system to solve juvenile crime, because it's incapable. It's just not equipped to solve some of the complex issues related to child development, trauma, and poverty. And we have to think cross systems and lead with a public health, child development, and best practices lens.
Representative Morales, you've spent a lot of time in district courts as an attorney. What conclusions have you reached about the system, the criminal defense system in Maine, and how defendants end up in court?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and it's really sad sometimes to spend time in district court, because it's very likely that you will see that the folks who are involved in our criminal justice side, in criminal court, in the district court, if you were to look deeply into what else is going on in their lives, it is likely that they are involved in family court, in child protective, the Office of Family Services, in foster care. They sort of cross all systems. And I would even argue, if any of you have sat in on small claims court, and it's very sad sometimes to be in there, because you see a lot of debtors in there and you know, banks bringing cases against debtors. And when we really understand how much it costs to live today, and how challenging it is, I think you've been talking about it on this program, but poverty, this is all related to poverty.
Representative Morales, yeah. Thanks so much for calling in. Victoria Morales serving her first term representing Maine's House District 13. We're going to go to Doug. Doug, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bangor.
Hi, go ahead.
Thanks, Jennifer. I spent 30 years in government. Jennifer, you and I interacted from time to time. I was John Baldacci's press secretary for his 8 years in Washington and first year in the governor's office. Then I went off to be Maine's chief deputy secretary of state. I say all that only because my career ended when I went to jail for 4.5 months because of self-medicating with alcohol to deal with mental health issues. And there were two regrets that I have. One, that I was a threat to public safety for many years. But secondly, that I didn't know about the vast injustices in our criminal legal system. The indigent legal services system is just one part of how our system is disproportionately punitive to the poor. This is what happens. And I watched it for 4.5 months in jail. Someone is arrested. They can't make bail. They can't come up with $200 to get out. And they're assigned an attorney who they then cannot reach because attorneys' offices don't take calls from people in jails. They're told to write to their attorney, and oftentimes they can't adequately put their thoughts into writing. So we have a system that keeps these folks in jail with an attorney who oftentimes pays very little attention to their case. And you're oftentimes in jail for 2 or 3 months before you get your day in court. And lives particularly of people who are poor, unravel very quickly in 30, 60, 90 days. Did you have an apartment? Gone. Did you have a job? Gone. Did you have children? Taken. Did you have Maincare? Gone. Just when you're arrested, you lose Maincare. So our system is disproportionately punitive to the poor. There's no question in my mind after 4.5 months. And Josh, this is how you get data, because the state will never pay to collect for, you know, to pay to cover, to collect enough data. Go to jail for a couple of weeks. It is better to be wealthy and guilty in this country and in this state than innocent and poor. That is the reality. It is so clear, and the injustices are so profound. We could start by making sure that the indigent legal services system, the requirements that are already in place, are adhered to. I understand there's a rule that attorneys are supposed to meet with their clients within 7 days of incarceration. Well, I got to tell you, I never saw that happen. You see the attorney minutes before you go into court, and sometimes you don't even get those few minutes before you go into court. Those are the realities.
Doug, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. Josh?
Yeah, if I may. Well, certainly Mr. Dunbar raises a concern that the commission shares, and that is if a defendant is incarcerated pre-trial and is having trouble contacting his or her attorney, and there's a sort of an unresponsiveness, that's a problem. And as a commission, we're looking at that. We're looking at how we make accountable legal practices, and we are certainly mindful that many practitioners will have a challenge in meeting up with clients in custody situation, in any situation, in particular with where rural practitioners. I think of a hypothetical where an attorney who has an office in Fort Kent is representing somebody who might be in custody in Windham. That's a real problem. So we need to figure out how to manage that, and more importantly, from the defendant's standpoint, how are they going to have access to counsel and have meaningful access so there can be a meaningful representation? I would like to comment on the leadership of Representative Morales, and in particular with the bill that she has that I believe has been carried over that requires the continuous representation of committed juveniles, those juveniles who have been sentenced and are in a custodial situation, serving out a sentence. The commission agrees, and we are responsive and thank the representative for her leadership. We have we believe that we had the authority, and so we've done it, and we've created a specialized roster of juvenile attorneys who will be focused on those. Representing those juveniles who need these administrative reviews within the Department of Corrections, and so we agree, and so that's one area where we think the representative's passion has moved the needle, and we've responded.
All right, go ahead.
LD 1684 is a wonderful bill, and it's something that MACDL and ACLU and many other interested groups have been working on, and it's a good example of the fact that there's a recognition around a wide array of problems, that there is a need to address them and a need to come up with solutions. There's very little debate, actually, about whether we should be doing something. It's just how are we going to go about doing it? And so there's broad consensus for a good amount of reform. I just wanted to comment on what Doug was saying about attorneys not being responsive to their clients, particularly if they're incarcerated, because I think his story is important. And one of the nice things that's come out of the Sixth Amendment Center report is we have an opportunity to hear stories like Doug's from a lot of people and really figure out why is this happening. One of the things we have learned, the commission has learned recently, is, as is true with everything, it's a shared responsibility. How these cases move through the system depends on the work of criminal defense attorneys, court staff, prosecutors, all of this. And one thing they learned recently is that attorneys aren't notified that they've been appointed to a case in a timely manner. So sometimes weeks can go by before an attorney finds out that a particular person who has been calling their office is in fact their client. Mm. So there's quite a bit of work to be done. And I just don't want to leave the impression that criminal defense attorneys are somehow being negligent in their responsibilities. If something's not happening that should happen, there's probably a reason for that, and it would be wrong to assume that it's because of ineffectiveness.
But I would love to go back and sort of to connect both Representative Morales's point and Doug's point is to talk to how for a very long time now we have tried to solve public health issues or poverty issues. They get caught up in the criminal justice system. And so, you know, it is so important to sort of hear what Doug is talking about the unraveling of people's lives, and unraveling that usually does not happen if you have money. If you are able to secure resources on your own for your family, for your child, so if you are a child with parents who can afford services, or you are you're able to hire a private attorney, you have a very different outcome. And that has a ripple effect throughout Maine in rural communities and urban communities and all across the state. We need to care about that because it is really impacting our state.
Oh, my. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Waterville Creates, inviting you to support the arts today with a donation at watervillecreates.org. And the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom, uma.edu.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On January 16, 2009, a new record low temperature was recorded for the state of Maine at minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit at Big Black River in northwest Aroostook. The previous record was minus 48 degrees Fahrenheit set at Van Buren, Maine on January 19, 1925. The Big Black River runs northeast and east across the Canada-United States border in Maine Township 14 to the St. John River in northwest Aroostook.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine.
On the next Fresh Air, secret documents written by Iranian intelligence officers leaked to the news organization The Intercept. They reveal how Iranian General Qasem Soleimani operated in Iraq like the Godfather, and how Iran came to dominate Iraqi politics. We'll talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter James Risen. Join us.
And that's coming up this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, possible changes to Maine's system for defending those who cannot afford a lawyer in court. My guests are Allison B.A. with the ACLU of Maine, Jamesa Drake, president of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and Joshua Tardy, chair of the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I want to get back to calls in just a minute, but first bring up something else that's been in the news, which is that the whole system has been is under investigation by what's referred to as OPEGA, the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability. Josh, the charge is that some defense attorneys have been overbilling and getting away with it because there is not proper oversight. I know that this is, again, under investigation now. What can you say about it at this point?
Yeah, well, The newly constituted commission welcomes the OPEGA's involvement and the use of those resources to try to shed some light on the issue and the perceived problems and the actual problems that are out there. I agree that the current system that we have in place is inadequate as it relates to financial supervision, for sure, and attorney evaluation and qualification and training. I agree. And it's where we're going to go from here. I do think that the problem is the greatest factor that's sort of causing this dire situation is resource-based. And so much of what comes out of Augusta is a nice policy discussion, but is really informed by the
money,
budget priorities and the competing interests that occur at the Statehouse. And so we think that the current commission is underfunded. and staff is working hard, and we're certainly looking at the model and the, from an organizational standpoint and a structure standpoint. But we welcome the fact that the legislature has asked OPEGA to make this a priority because we believe it is a priority. We think it's a crisis.
We're going to go to Nancy calling from Roque Bluffs. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks for listening. I'm sort of at the other end. I'm a law-abiding, low-income person, and I'm victimized, and I can get no help. There's no help for poor people, and I wonder why a criminal, perhaps a criminal, gets a public defender before the law-abiding poor people.
Nancy, I'm confused by what you mean. Have you gone to the police and you're not getting an investigation?
Oh, you go to the police and the police have protected the criminal. And in one case, someone came on my property, cut down one of my favorite trees, stole my blackboard. I went to small claims court because I was told that was a good place to go. Well, that, if you don't have a lawyer, you don't go to small claims court at all.
Oh.
And so that lasted a long time, and the criminal won.
Nancy, I appreciate your call. Unfortunately, the guests here today are here to talk about the criminal defense system. So although I have empathy for your situation, I'm going to need to move on to our next call. I'm going to go to Robert, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Robert. I'm an attorney that works on commission cases. It's 99% of my cases, and I've been doing this for almost 20 years. And I've been working on trying to reform the system for about a decade as well. What I think is central to a lot of the different issues is we don't have leadership. We don't have an entity that views itself and makes decisions as if the indigent defendants, the indigent clients are their clients. And that's a big problem.
It sounds like you want a public defender system where there's an office with a head.
I think so, but there are things that could be done now that aren't being done. I mean, the Sixth Amendment report, 90% of it was all things that came out in meetings over the nearly a decade that the commission has existed. And the commission, if it's a crisis, why isn't the commission asking for the recommendations, even for its central office? They're asking for two positions when the recommendation of the report for their central administrative office was for an additional 8 positions.
Okay,
and I don't
so
know
I'm going to throw that to you, Josh.
That.
Should there be somebody who, I think the parlance is takes ownership of this?
Yeah, and I think it's the obligation of the commission. I agree with the caller that the commission is the sort of the entity that needs to take sort of the leadership role. I mean, it's our statutory mission. It's disagreements with what a particular organization makes for a supplemental budget request could sometimes be resolved by somebody having an understanding of how the appropriation system goes in Augusta and that which is credible and that which is pie in the sky.
Robert, thanks for your call. I'm going to move on to Pam, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Yes. I have a adult child on the autism spectrum who has been to court multiple times. And while he's always told that he could have the lawyer of the day, I always choose to hire a private attorney, even though it is a sacrifice. I have seen the chaos of the lawyer of the day, and that's not a reflection of the individual attorneys. It is just seemingly chaos. And the first 10 years of my first professional life, I did work in a state that had a public defender, and I worked in domestic violence, so I had a lot of contact with the public defender's office as a counselor. And I believe that when you have a public defender's brick and mortar office, the individuals are making the choice to be public defenders. And they not only have a depth of knowledge about the law, but they also understand their clients.
Pam, thank you so much for your call. Jamesa, she calls it chaos.
It's hard to disagree with that. To the untrained eye, there's no question that what happens during the lawyer of the day process at initial appearances or arraignments, it looks chaotic. And it's possible that with a brick and mortar public defender office, it won't look so chaotic. But it's important to keep in mind that the lawyer of the day is literally just one day in the life cycle of a criminal case. And one of the unique and wonderful attributes of our system is, as I mentioned at the outset, some of our rostered attorneys do this work exclusively, like the last caller, but many of them have a combination on their caseload of court-appointed work and retained work. So it's very likely that coming out of the lawyer of the day process where the court has assigned an attorney, a defendant will be assigned someone who is not only representing indigent defendants, but is also representing someone at an hourly rate.
How is what is the line? How is it somebody determined to be indigent in terms of the court system?
It's a statutory definition that's based on the federal poverty level, and it's something that is evaluated periodically to make sure that the numbers make sense in Maine.
I think that although, I think we can't, though, minimize the impact of what an initial appearance in court can do and what our caller was talking about. There is no doubt that that people in Maine are not getting the kind of representation that they need. And I think it's also really important to think about who is in our court system right now. What we know is that people of color, particularly Black and Indigenous people, and people with disabilities are so incredibly overrepresented in the criminal justice system from every aspect, from policing to arrest to sentencing to sort of the entire spectrum. And so what you're seeing is certain communities getting pulled into a system and having very different outcomes. And so this is not the kind of state we want to have where the sort of the color of your skin or your disability status is going to have an impact on whether or not you can break free of a criminal justice system. And so I think we all agree. I mean, all of us are deeply committed to reform. And I think at the ACLU, we are very heartened to see the renewed interest and commitment to this, the fact that the governor has appointed a very powerful commission full of people with a deep experience and that they have been taking this charge seriously. And we certainly will be continuing to put pressure on as much as we can to really explain that this isn't just about some vague constitutional principle in an old document. It's about how people live their lives in our communities and that it's not fair. It is not fair to have a two-tiered system where you get a different result if you have money.
And that Josh. First appearance in court for most people is their first time in a very unfamiliar, intimidating, frightening place. And it's confusing. And at times it does have the appearance of chaos. And the Lawyer of the Day program is designed to assist in sort of mitigating that chaos and mitigating the confusion, but it's not designed to sort of provide the continuous representation. And lawyers of the day aren't supposed to be the attorneys that continue the representation of a particular person who is then found indigent through the application process. But we do think that the Lawyer of the Day program has some problems that can be solved. I believe this commission that I chair is committed to improving the ratio of lawyers of the day that are assigned to a particular court, and so that there are more lawyers there providing this triage-style advice. And we also think we need to look at the standards and qualifications for someone to get an appointment as a lawyer of the day.
Email here from Dorothy. It's reasonable to assume that with better defense, sentences would be shorter. It costs about $50,000 per year to keep someone in prison. Better representation would also result in saving money as well as lives. Is this something you all agree with?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you can't ignore the impact on a state budget around incarceration. I mean, we know that corrections spending from 2007 to 2017 went from $138 million to $182 million. I mean, we keep spending more and more on our criminal justice system and to a devastating impact in communities. I mean, we talked about, I mean, think about, it's not just a couple months in jail. We have many families we hear from who it's a night in jail because they can't make bail. And then what happens to their custody arrangement? What happens to their job? So this having good, high-quality defense counsel really be there to work the system and to sort of make sure that all the parties are taken care of should have a positive impact on our communities and the bottom line.
I'm going to go very quickly to Bruce in Bangor. Bruce, we're almost out of time. Could you make your comment quick, please?
Yes, I'm a bail commissioner, often I look down on the redheaded stepchild of the legal system held together by Ann Jordan to keep that system on top of things. We do a lot of bails for free if they can't come up with the $60, which is the majority of the cases we deal with. And I highly recommend this movie, Just Mercy. It talks about black legal system in Alabama, but it really applies to Maine, the how people can be lost in the system. And the screenwriter is a kid from Bangor. So I highly recommend that people go to the theater. They'll have an eye-opener. It was a tearjerker for me.
All right. Well, Bruce, thanks so much for your call. And very quickly, we're going to go to Atim in Portland. Atim, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I directed a clinical case management in San Francisco for a young adult court, first of its kind, to treat 18 to 25-year-olds as whole people, not just a criminal, but a person who committed a crime. And they had district attorney's office who pushed accountability. There was a courtroom to support public defenders at the table. And public defenders are important because they have to have the client's best interest. And it's not just about skewing the numbers towards private attorneys. It's about having the best representation. Anyway, there's best practices other places besides Maine. California is one of the places that has public defenders working. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just need to do best practice checks and go to places where representation like that works.
Atim, thank you so much for your call. And it will be the last call of the hour. Josh, I know you wanted to talk about where we're headed next.
Sure. Well, thank you for the opportunity. The newly constituted commission, there are 8 new commissioners. We started our work really in August. I think it's a commission that consists of citizens who are passionate about the cause, committed to improving the system substantively and the perception of the system, and to try to inspire public confidence, not just in the billing procedures of a various attorney, but in the perception of court-appointed attorneys on hall. And so we are looking at changing the training, providing more robust training, really doing a deep dive on the qualifications and providing the mentorship and oversight of attorneys so that they can be successful and carry out their mission.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you to all of you. I know there's so much more all of you would like to say and I would like to ask, but we're out of time. That was Joshua Tardy, an attorney with the law firm Rudman Winchell and chair of the Maine Commission of Indigent Legal Services. Allison B.A. is also here, executive director of the ACLU of Maine, and Jamesa Drake, president of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys. Lucy Suchek ran the board. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produced the show. I'm Jennifer Rooks.